The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
And we welcome you back. And Ross Dellinger joining us, fresh off of covering Bama and so many other important stories in college football. But yeah, I tell you what, Ross, before we get to the biggest story, and I want to talk to you about your cover in SI, let me get some thoughts, because it certainly has been talked about a lot here today, of just the weekend, especially Alabama's second half shutdown of Georgia. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Paul. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Pretty crazy weekend, but you know, on COVID year 2020, nothing really surprises me. I guess we're gonna. It's gonna be a weird year. You know, I was on the phone with Bob Bowlesby the other day, and he said the traditional winners will lose this year, and the traditional losers will win this year. Just COVID has just changed everything, and you're gonna see a lot more road upsets, and I think we saw a little bit of the weird this past week with, you know, Kentucky and South Carolina winning, and of course what Arkansas has done, and then Alabama. Not that it was a surprise, but obviously storming back to beat Georgia.
Well, let's piggyback off that and talk about your reporting, and it's just some fascinating things in this latest by you in SI, and I'll just let you explain exactly where we are, because there's so much confusion. There's also a lot of angst based on what I've read. Tell us exactly where we are and what could change in the future.
Yeah, this morning we published a story about contact tracing, and specifically about the 14-day mandatory quarantine for those people who are found to be a close contact, a high-risk contact, so within 6 feet for more than 15 minutes of a positive carrier of the virus. And that obviously is called, you know, that 14-day mandatory quarantine is causing some issues. You might imagine everybody kind of predicted that it would over the summer, and it is. It's probably the biggest obstacle right now for college football is having that mandatory quarantine for those close contacts. You know, we've seen it at a lot of places, 20, 30, 40 players not testing positive, but in quarantine because they were close to someone or several people who had tested positive. And what we're finding is that, number one, these close contacts, many of them don't ever turn positive. So they spend 2 weeks in quarantine without turning positive. Some players have spent up to a month, Paul, in quarantine because they've been in close contact two separate times over the last few months. So we're finding that not a lot of them turn positive, and we're finding doctors starting to uncover that if they are going to turn positive, they're going to do it by day 7 or 8 at the latest. And so college leaders are exploring ways to reduce that 14-day quarantine to maybe 10 or 8, or do something like the NFL is doing, Paul, which is allowing players to test out of quarantine. In the NFL, if you have 5 straight negative tests separated by 24 hours each, you can test out on day 5 and get out of quarantine. So right now, the most favorable plan going around, and specifically going around the SEC, is a plan that would have a close contact test negative 3 straight days in a row, day 5, 6, and 7, and get out on day 7 or 8, depending on when the result, I guess, comes back. Then they would be able to get back into activity. So, but they haven't, you know, that's not an official thing yet, and still jumping through some hurdles. There are a lot of local public health departments that will not sign up on that. The CDC has guidelines. It says a 14-day mandatory quarantine, and that's that. Also, you have some presidents that are kind of a little bit uncomfortable with doing the testing out because they are not doing that with their normal students. Their normal students are having to quarantine for 14 days. And so do they really want to do something different with athletes and have them test out? So there's a lot of issues, certainly. And I can touch real quick on the maybe the biggest of them all, and that's basketball. You know, doctors and administrators are very clear with me in doing this story the last week. We cannot play basketball if we don't have daily testing, because you cannot play basketball with under the current contact tracing protocols, because you have so many high-risk exposure in practice that if you have one positive on a team, the entire team will almost certainly have to quarantine for 2 weeks. So there's some issues, and in getting around it is, again, either reducing the quarantine time or either doing daily testing like we see in the Big Ten and Pac-12. That might better convince local health departments to let you lower the quarantine time if you do daily testing like, for instance, the NFL is doing. So lots of moving pieces, lots of stuff going on.
So, Ross, let me flip it over. The Big Ten is back. They have games this weekend starting Friday. How – you've already answered it in part, but for those who don't understand, how does the Big Ten differ from the SEC?
Well, they are doing daily testing. SEC is doing three tests per week. The SEC's tests are the PCR tests, which are kind of the gold standard. They are 95% and up as far as accuracy, and most of them are like 99%, I think, and up. Antigen test is what the Big Ten is doing. Now, antigen tests are really not meant, doctors will tell you, for surveillance testing, for daily testing. Their accuracy is as low as 85%, and as high as in the mid upper 90s. But they're not as accurate as the PCR. So what the Big Ten is doing is, once they get a positive antigen, then they're going to confirm it with a PCR. But because the Big Ten is doing daily testing, it's going to make contact tracing a little easier for them in the Pac-12 as well, because you're on a daily testing regimen. It just makes everything, you learn about a positive quicker. You learn that others, you know, are testing negative around them. So it just makes the contact tracing a little easier to do, and you might not have as many people in quarantine, and that's what they're at least hoping. And we wrote it in there, the Big Ten schools are also trying to convince their local health departments, you know, we're doing daily testing so we can not completely get out of this contact tracing, but we can make it, you know, easier. They're in a fight as well with local health departments. But I think we all have to keep in mind, they're doing antigen tests. And again, they're not necessarily meant. And I'll say, Paul, that the SEC, we reported this a couple weeks ago, they went away from antigen tests because they were getting false positives, but they also produce false negatives too, antigen tests do. Baylor had some false negatives. The SEC had enough false positives to make them scrap the plan to do an antigen on Friday and instead do a PCR on Thursday, a third PCR test on Thursday. So there's some issues. The Big Ten is the Pac-12 too. You know, they're hoping to play seven, or in the Big Ten's case, I believe nine games in 9 weeks, 7 and 7 weeks out in the Pac-12. And we've seen all the postponements already and the moving around of games. They don't have any margin for error, and they're hoping that this daily testing will prevent them from having to quarantine a lot of people through contact tracing, which can obviously, as we've seen, postpone a game.
Ross, big picture, having talked to all these people and understanding what the experts are predicting, and I'll leave the conversation about the experts to others, but it's not good. They're all predicting doom and gloom for COVID, and especially over the next 2 to 10 weeks, whatever. Is there considerably more optimism that this is all going to get in, meaning this season, or because we're seeing about what percentage of games canceled? It seems like a few a week. Last week we had two. So what's the overall picture for the future, the immediate future of the college football season?
Well, we crunched the numbers last weekend, and this is before this past weekend's game. So I think I crunched these numbers on Friday, if I recall. But it's about 16, I think, percent or somewhere around there of games postponed or canceled, somewhere around there. So and to get back to your question, it all depends, Paul, on who you talk to as far as what the outlook is for finishing a season. I was talking to an Arkansas State physician that runs their testing, and he said, I'm not convinced that we're going to finish the season. And you talk to somebody like Bob Bowlesby, you know, and some other team doctors who seem more convinced that we're going to get through it because of more reliable and available testing. What we're going to end up having is probably every conference in America is going to start to get to a daily testing regimen, whether that's a mixture of PCR and antigen. That's probably what's going to happen so they can cut down on this, the quarantining, you know, and the contact tracing. That's probably what we're looking at. And that might be the only way that we finish at least a basketball season, and maybe it's the only way we finish a football season.
Ross, final question. I don't mean to be naive, because it seems like things are going moderately well. The physician you spoke with, why was he so negative?
I guess it was just because of the amount of games, at least in his mind, that have been postponed, you know, interrupted. We're at, like I said, around 15% or 16%, and I think he just believes that he doesn't necessarily see that going down. You know, he sees that going up and maybe getting worse. But you know, that's just his opinion. And certainly there are team doctors that hold other opinions. You know, Chris Klink at Tennessee, and I really appreciated his time. He was really helpful. And this is something we haven't talked about, Paul. It's probably good for your listeners. In the SEC, they're wearing tracking devices, right? Every player during games to show how close they are in proximity to other players from other teams. And they're showing there's not a lot of high-risk contact because, which is kind of silly to say, right, in a physical game, but there's no players in a game, no players are within 6 feet of each other for a cumulative 15 minutes over the course of a game. It's a rare thing they're seeing, and that's why we're not seeing a lot of on-the-field transmission. So that is certainly a positive. But it just depends on who you talk to. You know, everybody's kind of got their different opinions.
Ross, thanks. Always great to have you on. Great reporting in SI, and we look forward to chatting again very, very soon.
Thanks, Paul.
Ross Dellinger, one of the supremely great reporters in this country, especially on COVID and college football. We will take a break. A visit to Columbia, South Carolina. How suddenly fans are happy. Your phone calls are next.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We welcome you back. Ben up next in Illinois as we continue here. Hey, Ben.
Yes. Hi, Paul. I'm a Big Ten fan, but I follow SEC strictly. I'm wondering your opinion and also SEC fan country in general. I think that this season going straight to of all conference slate, I mean, I'm biased, we play 9 games, you guys play 8, but it's how can fans put up with 4 non-con games? If you're talking about like even 1 or 2 FCS, how can you go back to that? The product is so much better now, where you like think about all the ups and downs. You got Mississippi State immediately vaulting, Tennessee did the same thing, and then you got to keep going through the grind. It's not this delayed, just kind of fluff and waste of time. Like, who was benefiting?
Well, Ben, let me explain. As a fan, as a commentator, I completely agree. I don't want to see those early and late games that are frankly a waste of time. I know they pay bills and give players a chance to rack up stats, but I don't want to see them. But the people making the decisions our athletic directors and other administrators, and in consultation with their coaches, I can tell you coaches hate what's going on right now. Why do they hate it? Because it's tougher. And they're suffering losses that they wouldn't have had. You know, normally, if you schedule correctly, you've got 3 wins already. And you lose a conference game, you can talk your way out of it. But you know, there's no talking one's way out of it for most of these coaches right now who are stuck in the middle.
But to be fair, I mean, Saban had been out in front and for
sure,
like a 10-game conference schedule with 2 non-com. I know Pat Fitzgerald
Ben, remember one other thing here. What if you're not in the upper division of the Big Ten or the SEC, what do you start hearing in early November? You know, we need another win or two for what? To be bowl eligible. And forget this year. I know that everybody's eligible. But in normal years, that's important if you're on the bubble as a coach and you add more conference games. And I think that's always been the resistance of the SEC to add that ninth game, is they don't want any more losses.
But it's the, I mean, it's not like the CFP committee has anything against the SEC. They have enough.
No, but we're not talking about Alabama and Georgia. We're talking about South Carolina and Tennessee here.
I'm saying that the whole idea of bowl eligibility has gotten watered down. If they want to go to five games, fine. But in general, it the fans are the ones who pay the bills.
They are and they aren't. But by the way, I'm not arguing with you. I agree with you. I'm just telling you what I've heard over the years, and it's a really interesting argument.
I'm just saying it's going to be hard for them to go back.
I'm willing to bet you that they don't change one bit. Nick is up next in Florida. Nick, thanks. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. I wanted to ask you about Mac Jones, but Jake, the previous caller, made me think of something, and if I could pontificate quickly on that.
Sure.
I think Gus Malzahn probably doesn't make it out of the month of October, and the very first call that Auburn should make is to one Lane Kiffin. Put Kiffin in a position to succeed with recruiting in a what's the opposite of Coke? It's Pepsi. You know, Coke's red, Pepsi's blue. What's the opposite of Saban? It's Kiffin. Put him at Auburn. And I think that's a home run. That should happen. But anyway, back to Mac Jones. And I wanted to ask you, Paul, has there been a bigger surprise in college football this year than Mac Jones? That's one.
Well, yeah, by the way, going into Saturday, I would have told you Stetson Bennett.
Well, geez, that guy, his arms are about the size of my 10-year-old's daughter. I don't need to see anything more than that to know. That and the looks on his face at the sidelines was enough for me. But can Mac Jones succeed at the next level? Can have you heard much from, like, Kuiper and, where he can go? Can he play as a starter in the NFL, Paul?
I can't answer that. But it's interesting about Mac Jones. If you go back 6 or 9 months, everyone was talking about Bryce Young. But the one thing that I did begin to hear in July and August, people that were seeing practice were swearing by Mac Jones. Now, he does have an advantage, and you know what that advantage is. And
he's smart. I know that.
Well, he is. He's all that. He's a great kid. We had him on the other day. He's got world-class receivers and a great running back, so it gives him a little more confidence. Got a good line too, so that all of those things do matter. And you know, you go down the interstate to Auburn, and you have the opposite situation going on down there in terms of confidence with Bo Nix. But I think Mac Jones is definitely going to go up on the charts. I think it's a really good question. Michael in South Dakota, you're on the air.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Michael, we're doing well. Thank you.
Hey, Paul, you know, I've been having this current nightmare that LSU gave up 600 yards to Mississippi State, and Mississippi State haven't scored a touchdown since last year. Is I'm dreaming, or is this for real?
Michael, you're dreaming. That never happened.
You sure? Because, you know, I'm a diehard SEC guy. I've been an SEC fan since I was knee-high to a grasshopper. And I just can't believe Mississippi State haven't done nothing since the first game against my Tigers.
Been a disaster.
And I'm still in shock that how did this happen? Was Bo Pelini the wrong choice for the defensive coordinator? I know what he did before when he was there. Is it just him getting them back adjusted to the SEC style, or what is it, Paul?
Well, If I'm sitting at the end of the bar, I'm going to tell you it's Bo Pelini. But I think if you look at it objectively, I think it's a lot more than that. And what's so interesting to me, and you know this as a fan, LSU really hasn't played a upper echelon team yet.
They haven't. So it scares me for down the road when they got, you know, Auburn, Bama. Georgia, I think. You know, like, it's scary.
Well, they don't have Georgia, but they have Florida and Texas A&M. I mean, that's what's so bewildering about LSU right now is, Missouri was picked to finish, next to the last. Mississippi State was picked to finish next to the last. I mean, we're talking about a couple of losses for the defending champs, and that they're almost impossible to explain. I mean, I've never seen a team have a significant victory like Mississippi State and fall off the cliff. I mean, you can't find Mississippi State right now.
They haven't done nothing, you know. But that's my first thing. Then my second thing is, I think you touched on it earlier. I know it don't matter right now with the AP poll, but after Saturday's victory, the way Alabama dismantled Georgia, do Alabama got at least an argument to be number one?
Michael, I was thinking about that. I'm on ESPN Sunday morning, and they asked me to vote. You know, not that it matters, but I mean, you're sitting there after the game, you have to send in your ballot, and I was tempted. But I still think Trevor Lawrence gives Clemson that it factor that maybe makes them just barely, narrowly ahead of Alabama. But it will be it could change. And I think if Alabama continues to steamroll, it very likely will change. And then Clemson gets a chance against Notre Dame and a couple of other schools. Hey, thanks for the call. Really, really appreciate it. We are heading to a break. Been a busy, busy show with Coach Stoops on earlier. Eli Gold, the voice of the Tide. You heard Ross. More guests. Josh Kendall on the turnaround in Columbia right after this.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And before we get to Josh Kendall, did you know Carolina's win over Auburn first since 1933. That was Franklin Roosevelt's first term after taking over from Herbert Hoover after the Great Depression, years before World War II. That was a long time ago. and everything is better in Columbia now. And Josh Kendall, who has taken us through some downbeat days and talks of buyout, I can't wait to get Josh on now. And let's hope that sunny skies are out today. I know they are. Josh, thanks for the time. How important was that win?
Well, it was huge. I'm on the record, or entered the season on the record, that I didn't think there was going to be a coaching change at South Carolina, regardless of what happened basically on the field, with Will Muschamp having a $13 million buyout in the middle of a pandemic. I just didn't see any way there was a coaching change. But, you know, 3 weeks into the season, I was wondering if this team was going to test that theory really hard. So the fact that Auburn came in here, number 15, but a little bit of a wreck, limping in, and gave South Carolina an opportunity to turn things around, and they took advantage of it, which is something that they haven't always done when those opportunities have presented themselves in the past. So, yeah, Will Muschamp's in a much better mood. Everybody in Garnet and Black is in a much better mood. Now they're headed to LSU, defending national champion, but again, reeling, maybe without its starting quarterback on top of that. So, you know, certainly, you know, Gamecocks suddenly are, you know, checking out hotel prices in Atlanta in December, you know, just in case.
Yeah. Hey, I hate to make you the LSU beat reporter, but give us what you know about Miles Brennan right now.
Well, I don't to say that I know much would be inaccurate. I don't know any more than what Ed was saying today. I mean, when a coach is talking at the beginning of the week about we might be without so-and-so, in my experience, that means we will be without so-and-so, and you just, you know, you're getting folks ready for that reality. So I think South Carolina, my guess is South Carolina will face a freshman quarterback.
So, Josh, let's look at this game and look at the rest of the season. You can't do anything about the first couple of weeks. And the Auburn game was one they had to have, I think. That would be a fair statement. LSU is tough. You got LSU this weekend, then A&M at home, at Ole Miss, Missouri, Georgia, and Kentucky. The good news is that the Tigers only have two losses. Excuse me, the Gamecocks. The bad news is you got the Tigers this weekend, and I wouldn't say there's an automatic win the remainder of the season.
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, despite, you know, how rosy everything is here at the moment, this is still a team that where, you know, 500 might be the ceiling. 500 is what you're shooting for right now. And but 3 days ago, 500 looked like a pipe dream. After losing to Tennessee, you know, people were talking about two wins. So when your expectations are two wins, you know, if you get to five, that feels pretty good at the end of the day and the end of a season like this. So, yeah, there's no question. My comment about hotel rooms in Atlanta was completely facetious. This is a team that has still got a lot of holes, but the SEC is shaking out in such a way that those holes may not be fatal every week.
Josh, a 500 record, or even a 4-6, whatever it is, you've already alluded, it probably won't make any difference. I realize we're only four games in, but I'm just curious, as somebody who lives this every day, to describe to the rest of us the vagaries of being a Gamecock fan, especially in the shadow of the number one team in the country.
Well, I think that, unfortunately for Will Muschamp, Steve Spurrier changed what being a Gamecock fan meant a decade ago. In the previous 100-and-something years or 100 years of South Carolina football, what Will Muschamp is doing would be just fine, if not pretty dang good. The problem that they have now is they're working under the expectations set by those 2010 through 2013 teams, which provided proof of concept that South Carolina could win in the SEC and spurred donations to the program and a $50 million football facility that just opened up. So all of a sudden, what was good enough the first 100 years is no longer good enough. So South Carolina, from an administrative level, is going to have to make a decision, I think, near the end of 2021, as to what exactly they are. And that will go into whether or not they keep Will Muschamp. If what they think they are is a team that needs to be a good, solid, well-run football team that might have a chance every third year to get into the conversation, maybe, if and you feel like is making a little bit of positive momentum. Kentucky, a Kentucky-ish kind of pace, if that's okay, then they might keep Will Muschamp, because I think that there's a proof of concept that he can do that. If they decide, no, we're the early 2010s team that nobody wanted to play that finished fourth in the nation in 2013, then there'll probably be a coaching change.
And as someone who watches this program and has for many, many years, what is it missing? Why has Coach Muschamp been unable to get over that hump?
Well, it's missing the backstop of being a blue blood, which is that your recruiting is never going to dip past a certain level, probably, if you're one of the elites. And you add in the fact that it has to play so many blue bloods. So the ceiling, you know, feels like most years, again, going back to those 100 years, and especially with what Clemson's doing now, there's a real hard ceiling to how high you can get. And so when you take, if you're taking four games off the table at the beginning of the year that you're almost never going to win, if eight is the top, well, then you can't stumble. And this is a team against anybody else. And this is a team that's not made itself good enough not to stumble against lots of other people. So, you know, it comes down to, you know, the games in the balance. Can you win the games in the balance? They didn't against Tennessee. They did against Auburn. That's the life that South Carolina lives right now. That not you don't come into it thinking, all right, we're gonna win six. Now we got to go see if we can win three more. That's not how it works. You can't, especially with a conference only schedule. You know, you start at zero and you've got to earn every one of them.
Josh, I know this is kind of a crazy question because we're in a crazy time, but as you look ahead, you mentioned 21, whether or not that is a critical year. Assuming that the world is somewhat back to normal, what does the South Carolina schedule look like in 21, if you have any idea right now? Because right now it's hard to know anything.
I've barely looked past next week. I know they play LSU next week and have a bye after that, and I'm not sure I could confidently talk about anything beyond that. The schedule, you know, they still play Georgia and Florida. They still play a Texas A&M team that looks, you know,
and
that's
Clemson,
always
going to
be more well-resourced than them. So it doesn't get any easier, but, you know, it just depends. Right now, if you're a South Carolina fan, you're looking at 2021 and thinking, Kevin Harris is running pretty well, and he's a sophomore. And Marshawn Lloyd will be healthy. In year two, Mike Bobo will be great. And Colin Hill can come back if he wants to. And the receivers have got to get better because outside of Shai Smith, they can't get much worse. And the defense is number three in the SEC in scoring right now. So maybe we're moving in the right direction. That's what you're thinking now, coming off of a win over Auburn. Coming off of a loss to Tennessee and kind of a bumbling loss against Florida, at least late in the game, that's not what you were thinking at all. You were thinking, this is a disaster. We're never going to win another game. The beauty of the SEC is, you know, your mood can change a lot from week to week.
That's what happens, though, as you know, when you're in the middle. It's very fragile.
And there's no room for error, and that's just the reality that South Carolina lives with. They're in the middle, and it takes, you know, you got to do a lot of things right and get some breaks to get out of the middle, and they're not doing enough things right now to consistently, you know, be top of the middle.
Well, we had Mark Stoops on a couple hours ago. He'd be very happy to know that he's now the model for everyone in the middle.
That's right. He's the best of the rest. That's the goal for most people in the SEC heading into every year, the best of the rest. And Mark Stoops wears the crown right now.
Well done. Josh, always good to have you on. Thank you. Enjoy the rest of the season, if that's possible. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Paul.
You got it. Big win. Big game coming up. You're right. LSU, perhaps, without Miles Brennan. We'll pause there and think about what that means to LSU. We'll take a break. A lot to do the rest of the day. We'll head to Tennessee, which lost a coach today. And fans are besides themselves. Not about that, but about the quarterback and the loss. We're coming right back.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Troy, or Tony, I'm sorry. Tony is up next in Mississippi. Hey, Tony.
Hey, Paul, how the heck you doing?
I am doing great. I hope you are.
Paul, I am. I'm your newfound friend. This is the third Monday in a row.
Well, that's fantastic.
I was able to call you from Escatawba, Mississippi. First of all, Paul, I want to say congratulations to Alabama for a great game and a good game by Georgia. And second of all, Paul, do you ever do a book signing at Alabama Bear Bryant Museum over the years?
I'm trying to remember. I think I've been there before. It's been a while. I did a book tour about 5 years ago where I did, but I'm pretty sure many years ago I did one there for another book.
Yeah, 5 or 6 years ago, me and my son went. We'd go to one game a year for about the last 7 or 8 years. And the first game, we went to the Bear Bryant Museum, and I believe that's where I actually met you for the first time. And it was an honor.
Well, thank you. That means a great deal.
Yes, and just two quick little things. Cat Daddy that calls every now and then. Me and my wife love him to pieces.
He's amazing.
And if I could ever meet up with him, we'd take him in the pontoon boat up and down the Pascagoula River or the Escatawba River. I live right between both rivers. And all he's got to do, my wife says, is bring the moonshine.
Well, he's the one that should be having a book signing. He would draw more than anyone.
Yeah, and the other thing is, I was going to talk about a gentleman you have called that says, I think his name is I-Man. But once my wife told me what school he supported, all I can say is just bless his heart, Paul. But anyway, Paul, you have a good day and roll tide.
Tony, thank you. Hope to meet you again soon. Mary is up next in Birmingham. Hello, Mary.
Hey, Paul.
Hey there.
How are you?
I am doing well. Thank you.
So I'm an Auburn fan, and here's what I want to do. I want to put billboards up all over the country, hell, all over the world, and say, why can't Auburn get a coach that can turn us around like all the other teams have been able to get? What do you think?
Man, I have defended Gus Malzahn for a long time, but I am going to sit back and just listen to fans right now. They're not happy, are they?
Well, no, and I love Gus, but I think he just settles for mediocrity, too often. And I think that's evident in his press conferences. Right now, this is not going to be popular with the other Auburn fans, but I want a Saban assistant.
Yeah, I agree with you. I heard this from Pruitt as well. When a coach loses, I want the coach I know they're upset. We don't need him to tell us. But I want the coach to display that. Like, I'm fed up with this. And we're going to do something differently. And too often, there's now a new model of coaches that show up after the game or on Monday or Tuesday, as Gus does, and it's robotic.
It really is. And it's the same thing, over and over again. Okay, we're gonna fix it. We're going to do better. But here's some things we did well. And that's not really what we want to hear right now. We want to hear, hey, we're not playing well, but we're going to do what we need to do, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
You're right. Hey, thanks, Mary. Really great to hear from you. Unfortunately, we're out of time. We have another hour to go, and we hope you'll stick around.